The following is a special presentation of Alpha Media. Welcome to Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. Now, here's your host, Brett Recap.
Well, thank you very much. Good day. Welcome in to the 510th edition of Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of the stories making news right here in the Pacific Northwest. As we move through this month of March and into April, on all seven of our Alpha Media Portland radio stations, including FM News 101. The big dance is in the Rose City. We're talking about the women's side of the NCAA basketball tournament. The Sweet 16 and Elite 8 Portland bracket is going down this weekend at Moda Center, with half of the bracket games being played right here in Portland. I got a chance to make my way down to the Portland Police Bureau Central Precinct on Wednesday of this week. Before we hear from the PPB Chief of Police, let's check in with KXL's Tim Lance, who's looking into what it took to make this tournament happen here in Rose City and what it means to the Portland area.
Competition for the NCAA tournament games is cutthroat, according to Matt Reed with Sport Oregon.
I think particularly the rise in interest in women's sports, it has gotten extremely competitive.
Sport Oregon, though, was able to put together a winning game plan to bring the games to Portland by working with a number of partners.
You know, the folks at the Rose Quarter are fantastic. Folks in the city are fantastic, and we really welcome these teams and the NCAA with open arms, and they see that.
Reed says the economic impact is going to be over $3 million.
When you look at the hotel rooms, it's about 3,500 rooms. That does not include fans. That's just players, staff, NCAA, headquarters, media, stuff like that. It's significantly more than that number.
And the money is expected to spill out into the Portland suburbs and even nearby coastal and mountain communities. Tim Lance, FM News 101.
All right, thanks, Tim. Now let's hear about how our local Portland Police Bureau is getting ready to make sure everyone stays safe. Let's pick it up with PPB Chief Bob Day, who spoke to me and other reporters about their plan for security on Wednesday.
I'm excited for the city, excited for the teams, for the community, as well as the many fans that are going to come from out of state. I'm a big basketball fan myself. I've been following the women's tournament and the men's tournament, so I'm really looking forward to being able to host them. As the chief of police, it was just super important to me that we do everything on our part to try and create a really positive experience for folks and a very welcoming experience for people to come to Portland on the national stage. So a couple of weeks ago, met with several other of our bureau partners, PBOT, Prosper Portland, others, just to kind of talk about how we can holistically really lay out the welcome mat for folks to have a great event. So speaking specifically for PPB, starting today at 4 o'clock, we're gonna have a two-person team, two-person teams, correct, Mike? Right,
yes.
Two-person teams, starting at 4 o'clock today, that will be on foot, focusing both in the downtown area and then over around the Moda Center and the Ritz. It's Hyatt. The Hyatt's over on the other side there. And so over at the Hyatt, where the teams are staying. And then starting tomorrow, we're going to have teams doing that from 8 in the morning till midnight. That'll include me on Saturday. The deputy chief and I are going to walk 4 to midnight on Saturday. Now, I haven't been up past 10 in about 10 years, so we'll see how that works out. But the deputy chief and I will be out 4 to midnight walking. We have our motor units, which are in charge of escorts of all the team buses, and are using our motor units to supplement our activity around the area, both Moda Center, downtown, you know, kind of inner northeast, and then just, you know, really proud of how kind of the Bureau has continued to embrace my belief of seeing ourselves as sort of one Bureau, and also about the emphasis we're trying to transform the dynamic with community and community relationships. So been partnering with hotels, you know, getting out to the restaurants, just making sure that we're seen and available with this event that's coming to town, trying to do our best, put our best foot forward. So we just wanted you to be aware of that. And I kind of wanted to brag a little bit because I'm just excited how people have shown up on the PPB end. A lot of command participating, keeping our overtime costs really low, and just being available and saying, yeah, we want to make sure that Portland's shining in the best light.
Chief entertainment detail too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we'll have our entertainment detail out, which is already available, but they'll be in the downtown core over the weekend. And then, of course, our regular response. I mean, we have our bike squads out during the day. We have, you know, regular patrol both in Northeast and in the Central Precinct. So, you know, this is to augment that high visibility, availability, just create a good, positive experience for folks.
After that opening statement, Chief Day took some questions from reporters. Portland Police Bureau Chief Bob Day starts out by talking about how they're ready to handle whatever might come up during the tournament itself, while still being able to get to other crimes or incidents around town.
We're obviously, you know, if there's police action to be taken, then we're going to take it. But the expectation of people on this detail is really just that availability and that presence. We're not pulling from other parts of the city. We want to be able to continue to provide that level of support.
Do you have a rough number about how many of those officers are going to be available to focus on the tournament?
We can get it to you, but, you know, there's probably about 10 bikes. And, you know, I mean, it's four cops from 8 to 4, four cops from 4 to midnight. And then, you know, the additional bodies that we already have working. So
I think if you do the math, it's probably 2 to 3 dozen. But we like, I don't like to get into the numbers per se as far as just the shifts.
Okay. Yeah.
When
yeah.
you say bikes, do you mean motorcycles or bicycles?
Yeah, sorry, motorcycles. Yeah, when I say bikes, I'm sorry, the interchangeable. So, you know, about 10 motor officers that are going to be involved with both escorts and then high visibility once the teams are playing and they're not needed for the traffic portion of it. And then a minimum of two teams of two in 8-hour shifts walking around high visibility.
For people that aren't going to the tournament and you know, have to go by the Moda Center just to commute or anything this coming weekend, what advice do you have to them? What should they expect to see as well?
Yeah, well, we're going to do our best to, you know, create this positive environment, but also understand it's going to be high activity. You know, I would encourage the use of TriMet, certainly. You know, the train runs right through there. As a good alternative, it will be congested. You know, once again, getting the teams in and out, getting, you know, making sure the fans can get in and out. So, you know, just be aware that, you know, starting tonight through Monday, we're going to have a lot of stuff going on over there. So I just encourage people to be aware of it. But I think TriMet is probably the best route.
How much is this costing? I mean, all these extra bodies.
Well, I mean, you know, I get paid regardless, so it's not costing extra for me at all. I'd have to look at the numbers, but we really emphasize keeping the overtime numbers low. I can ask Mike to take a look at that. I think it's pretty insignificant in the big picture. We're really trying to be more fiscally responsible, take stuff out of Hyde, and just, you know, move the resources around. So I think it's pretty low, comparatively speaking, to maybe other missions that we've done. That's why I'm asking Command to participate more to help defer some of that cost, but we can get you those numbers.
Yeah, as a Portlander hosting such a big national tournament, what's it like for you to see Portland host, especially at a time when Portland's trying to rebound and get people downtown and in these formerly high traffic areas?
I'm literally excited about it. I mean, I just think it's fantastic, right? And it's certainly something that's been planned long before, you know, the challenges that we're facing as a city and what I would say in this, you know, state of recovery that we're working towards. But it just really, you know, whether just lucky or good, but it just really fits the narrative of where we're trying to go as a community, right? And Portland's a beautiful city. I mean, you know, certainly today's a little cloudy and gray, but, you know, cherry blossoms are out. I really feel like the city's going in the right direction, and this is just a chance to highlight that. And physically having people come and be present is part of that, just that momentum. And these are great teams. I mean, super fun to see, you know, Stanford come in with, you know, Ms. Brink, who's, you know, from the area. You know, it'd be great if we could have had Oregon State or somebody, but, you know, we've got some PAC schools that'll be here, and then, of course, we're going to have people from all over the country. So I think it's going to be great.
You've been on the field.
Did I say on the field?
Yeah. No, no.
Oh.
No. I'm just saying you've been in, you've been on the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you tell the difference? I mean, you had security around you.
Yeah.
While you're working.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you're kind of on the other side.
Yeah, no, I think it's really important for all the participants and the fans to have that confidence, you know, when they attend that, you know, to the best of our ability, we're providing, you know, the safest, most efficient. And that goes everything from, you know, traffic just getting in and out to that physical presence of safety to coming out, making sure your car is secure, you know, whatever it might be. As well as internally, you know, the Moda Center and the NC2A, they're hiring officers to be inside as well. That's separate, you know, from us, but I mean, it's still Portland Police, but that's a separate contract. But so we're, you know, really having kind of a inside-out approach that I'm really pleased about.
In looking at the data dashboard for February of this year, mm-hmm. there were 79 assaults downtown. That's up from 54 in January. A year ago, February, there were 46. Do you have the March numbers? I mean, the numbers look like they're rising, at least in the past couple of weeks downtown.
Yeah, I don't have the March numbers right in front of me. Obviously right in front of me, but I don't have them off the top of my head. I haven't looked at them. A couple of ways that, you know, we look at crime and crime trends, right? Certainly, we're always looking at the numbers. We're always evaluating. But there's a lot of different factors that go into reporting of crime. And so just looking at, you know, the numbers isn't always tell us the whole story. What I prefer to do is have the team really dig into, look at the cases, look at the reports, give us an understanding. And I'll use a different example, shoplifting. We've made a real heavy emphasis on retail theft. So we're seeing a big increase in the reporting of retail theft because people know that we're being more responsive to it. That's not necessarily the case with assault. I'm not suggesting that any of these people who were assaulted are, you know, simply choosing to report because they think somebody's going to investigate their case. But we need to really look at those numbers more carefully, look for trends, you know, consistencies, maybe, you know, certain suspects doing multiple assaults so we can identify things like that. So, you know, we're aware of that. We look at the numbers every single day trying to figure out how to mitigate what's impacting and driving those numbers.
I was just going to add too, like I know, like the assault, the shooting outside the Virginia Cafe, that's unsolved as of right now. The stabbing by the firehouse still, but there's a lot happening behind the scenes right now, working diligently to get that done. I talked to Major Crimes just yesterday, and they're working the case of the fisherman pretty aggressively. So things are happening behind the scenes on all that.
So also the Central City, or I guess like the 90-day command team. Includes PPD officers
yes.
as part of this 90-day Finchel emergency, and they are working downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where exactly downtown are they?
They're all over.
Yeah.
Is this pulling any resources away from that?
No, this is in addition to. So, I mean, you know, the what I mean by addition to, I was thinking in terms of state police, I think, are with us today. That's in addition to. But the bike squad works downtown all the time. Our downtown neighborhood response team is also doing some of the similar type work. I met with them this morning. So it's not pulling from anything as much as it's just continuing to emphasize those resources that are already in place. And then, as I've said before, I'm constantly looking and evaluating how do we strengthen what we're already doing, because I really want to highlight the stuff that's working well. And there are many things, as Mike mentioned, that are, you know, examples of some of the successes that we're having.
Emily, the bike squad, too, just to make it clear. I mean, they're a big part of the fentanyl emergency. But if they're out on that sort of work and an emergency happens, they're not going to not respond to something else because they don't exclusively do fentanyl.
Yeah, I mean, my expectation is as an organization, I mean, we are, I use the term one bureau, one city, right? One bureau, one city. We have to see ourselves as a holistic operation. So all of these resources that I mentioned that are working associated with the NCAA event this week are also available for anything that might come along that the traditional patrol can't handle. So, you know, this is an augment of that, but nobody is in a spot where they're just, you know, completely siloed. I want us to continue to really see ourselves holistically and then not only see us as one bureau, but one city. We're part of the city of Portland and we're part of the community. I'm changing my language around, you know, police and community. It's like, no, we're the community. We're the community. I understand the role of police is significant and is separate and different, but we are the community. And that's why I want to be a part of this March Madness effort, is because I feel like, you know, that's being part of the community, but also in our role as public safety professionals.
I'm not sure if I caught this, but state police and the sheriff's office, are they helping out with security as well? Is it just
not specific to March Madness? No, I mean, state police is in town today just because they've been supplementing us. You know, the sheriff, I know, is because sheriff has transit responsibilities. I know we've had conversations with the sheriff about increased presence down around the Moda Center. And I've also met this past week with Sam, the director of TriMet, and we had a conversation about efforts that they're going to be doing as well.
Can you talk to us a little more about the NCAA? You said that they were actually providing some funds. So, you know, when you win a bid like this as a city, there's a big, there's a national spotlight and there's infrastructure that goes with that. Are you receiving any dollars or any help?
Oh, I might have misspoke. I haven't seen any dollars from the NC2A, certainly.
I think so, what he means, what she was referring to, is like when there's an event at Moda Center, you know, they hire A lot of people on OT.
Right,
so it's
right.
Like you're going to see the same sort of people that are at Blazers games inside the building, but that's all, like, they hire us on overtime, and it doesn't impact, you know, our services.
Yeah, yeah. So that's like a, it's almost like a private contract that they do with the city. So that don't, that doesn't directly come to the Portland Police Bureau, so to speak. Like, that's a separate deal.
Is there a number on how many they hire?
I don't know. I mean, you'd have to ask. That's more the center stuff. Like, yeah. Any event there, concert, anything, they just go through.
Yeah. Blazer game. Yeah, they go through an agreement that we have with the PPA.
If you're not working a night shift and want to work a Blazers game, make a couple extra bucks.
Yeah, a lot of times they'll show, when they're in a city, you'll get a flash. Hey, here's Portland. Here's the skyline. Here's what's beautiful in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
What are you hoping they show in Portland?
Well, it's going to be a great weekend. I mean, you know, we're getting through a little bit of gray and cloudy right now, but it's going to be a beautiful weekend. I mean, I'm hoping they show the, you know, cherry blossoms. I think the Portland skyline is fantastic. You know, I love coming across the Markham Bridge and looking back at the city. It's just really beautiful. Or coming over the Fremont. I mean, my wife always kind of chuckles because I'm like, man, it's just a beautiful city. You know, I just think, I think our bridges are remarkable. And then, you know, you got to get a scene of a shot of Mount Hood with all its luster with the sun and all the snow that's on it right now. I mean, this is the month to look at Mount Hood, right? March and April is when it's just, you know, in all its grandeur. So those are some easy off-the-top things. And then I'd love to see them highlight the restaurant scene. You know, there's so many good restaurants that we still have, and we've certainly been known as a foodie city, and we've struggled. That area struggled like others, but I think that, you know, it'd be great to show some restaurants. Like when they do games in Seattle, you know, they show Pike Street Market or whatever, it'd be great to, you know, highlight some of the restaurants that the fans and teams and stuff will be using.
Final question for me. Have you done any cleanup around the whole area? Yeah, you know, ahead of this event.
Yeah, I have not. The PPB, that's handled through the Community Safety Division or PBOT, so I'd reach out to them. I don't know what specific. I mean, we've been talking about the need to put our best foot forward, so they may have had a strategy involved there, but that's not in my wheelhouse.
So for folks who are coming here from out of town, they go to the game, you know, a few years, and they decide to walk home or scooter home, do you have any safety tips for folks who might be walking around at night, especially maybe downtown or along the waterfront or along the bridges?
Yeah, yeah. I'm a big advocate of awareness, you know, really just, you know, being aware of your surroundings, right? I was downtown a couple of weeks ago, late in the evening for an event, and then, you know, my wife and I walked a couple blocks over to one of the bars that was still open, and, you know, I just think as a city, we have to have a recognition that we're a big city and we're going to have big city challenges. And that doesn't mean that it's, you know, unsafe. It just means that we just need to have that awareness as we move about. And so I just ask people to, you know, recognize their surroundings. You know, it's better when you can travel in pairs or in groups. Certainly alcohol can impair some of our decision-making processes. So, you know, if you realize that you're having a few beers, you know, picking and choosing maybe the conversations that you do and don't engage in. And then just be, you know, confident that we're out and about and we're being seen and we want to be available. So I think all of that, you know, should lend to a pretty good weekend.
Is there any additional pressure? One of the teams, I believe it was the University of Utah, when they were in Idaho last week as part of the tournament, they were the victims of some individuals were yelling racist remarks at them. Has there been any thought put into that saying, hey, we really want to make sure that none of the teams here are exposed to anything like that? Not that that would reflect our community, but, you know, it happens from time to time.
Yeah, absolutely. We had that discussion in our executive meeting on Monday. You know, we've read the articles and are very much aware of that. Obviously, it's just completely unacceptable in our book. I mean, we're not going to tolerate, you know, that behavior. Certainly, you know, we can't, you know, there's free speech all over the place that we have to be able to mitigate and manage. But just from an expectation standpoint, we're very much aware of the concern of the events that happened there. And, you know, that doesn't represent us. And we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to have all the students and fans be able to come and have it be really positive.
Has there been any, did you up any of the numbers based on what happened in Idaho? Or
No. This was all stuff that we've already been working on. But, you know, like I said, we're aware of you know, available to have those conversations if we need to. I'm cautiously optimistic and hopeful that we're not going to have that challenge here. But it's definitely something that's on our radar.
Yeah, John, I don't want to draw any parallels there. The timing of our release had nothing to do with what happened in Portland.
For sure.
But God forbid something like that happens, I can tell you major crimes will be all over that. We have laws in place that for bias crime, obviously, and that won't be accepted.
Yeah.
Anything else, guys? Chief's got to go to another.
Can you just provide the update that you do have on the fisherman that was stabbed? You said there was an update.
No, I said they're working the case. I mean, there's nothing necessarily that we're willing to share because, like, you know, we have to keep stuff close to the vest sometimes to make sure the investigation's moving forward. But there's engagement between command and that family, and the detectives are working the case aggressively.
Yeah, we met with the family, and we're also meeting on Friday with the where the gentleman lives, has a lot of other people in his community. So we're making ourselves available there. We're working with our Asian Pacific Islander Advisory Council on this conversation. So we're, you know, really doing a lot of outreach and relationship building there in addition to the investigation of the crime.
And it's still not being categorized as a bias crime at this point?
I don't know if it's been categorized.
I talked to Major, it is not a bias crime at this moment. Okay. But of course, they're still looking at any possibility of that.
And I want to recognize that, you know, certainly I understand the community's concerns around these events and these incidents, and we are not, you know, ruling out that as a possibility. We recognize that there's certainly a history here of, not here, history nationally, but also could be in Portland of, you know, anti-Asian sentiment. And so we're, you know, we just have some legalities that we have to follow in terms of how we word things. But I agree with Mike, you know, we're not saying this is not a bias crime. We're saying is we're investigating this and we recognize that there is that potential here.
I want to make it clear, our folks in major crimes are extremely passionate about bias crimes, but you just can't, because the victim, you know, is not white, call it a bias crime. We will call it a bias crime out of the gate if there's indications there, but this one, there, it's not there yet. And so, but they're clearly looking at this through every lens they can, and like I said, trying to get some closure.
Yeah. All right. Great job. Thank you. Thanks for being available.
Any attorney picks out there for you?
You know, I tell you, I've been going back and forth between both the men's and the women's.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I thought, let's see, where's that? You know, that camera, that Stanford-Iowa State game surprised me. You know, I thought Stanford, especially with Brink only getting 8 points, I was kind of surprised she found out. Love to see the Beavers continue to be, you know, successful. I think USC played really strong the other night. The USC women's team played really strong the other night. Yeah. So, you know, I think, we'll see.
There is Portland Police Chief Bob Day, along with spokesperson Mike Benner and local reporters, speaking on Wednesday ahead of the series of Sweet 16 and Elite 8 NCAA Women's March Madness basketball games. It's all happening at Moda Center. Towards the end of the press conference, the chief and others also touched on a few other cases they're working, as well as some unfortunate incidents involving racist remarks and other basketball teams. Hopefully that does not happen here. If you're just visiting us here for the games or catching this show, welcome. We hope you're enjoying yourself and that you'll come back soon. Finally, an absolute nightmare played out in Baltimore early this week as a major bridge literally collapsed after getting hit by a ship. Thankfully, the captain was able to use a Mayday call ahead and get the cars off of the bridge. Sadly, people were still killed in the incident. When it happened, Veronica and I started thinking about Portland's situation and all of our bridges and how vulnerable we could be to something like this. With that in mind, we checked in with ODOT's Don Hamilton on Tuesday morning to get his thoughts.
A state of emergency has been declared after a container ship slammed into a very heavily traveled bridge in Baltimore overnight, causing a major collapse. Vehicles were sent plunging into the water. Don Hamilton from ODOT joins us now. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
All right. Well, as soon as I heard about this, the thing that crossed my mind, and I know it must cross other people's minds too, is could that type of thing happen here?
Well, we certainly hope not. I mean, we have a lot of container ships, not the size of that one, that are going up and down the Columbia River all the time. And it takes a lot of very careful navigation by those container pilots going up and down the river. They've got to be very, very careful. But it's going on every day up and down the river.
So how do you coordinate bridge lifts? Some of these ships are just straight up too tall to travel under a number of our Portland area bridges. How is that coordinated?
Well, we're watching all of that very carefully, and the operators know, the barge operators know where they can go and how tall they need to be. A lot of it depends, as you get closer to the ocean, on the tides and the river height. So they know exactly what they need to do and where they need to go in the river channel. Now, when you get to the interstate bridge down here, there are wide spans, there are high spans where they need to cross under the interstate bridge in there too as they go. So it's a very careful calculation that they need to make as they go under the river. But these pilots know how to do it. They do it all the time.
I'm wondering, you know, I haven't researched it yet. Do they just not do bridge lifts there? I mean, was this not a bridge that they could move?
I don't know the specifics of what was going on in Maryland on this, but you can be sure that anytime we see something like this, our bridge people are watching very carefully to find out what happened here, too. Obviously, we all want to know what was going on with this, too. This is a major tragedy in here, too, and we want to know what happened. We want to know if there are any lessons that we can learn from this to find out if there are things that we can do to make our system safer. That's one of the most important things that we can learn from this, too. And as we go forward today and in the days ahead, we want to know what can we do to make our system safer. That's the important lesson that we're going to learn from this.
Don Hamilton with ODOT is with us. When we saw bridge collapse, we immediately think about earthquakes, Don. And here in the Northwest, we're the Cascadia subduction zone right on top of that. And that is certainly a threat. So does this make ODOT and others be a little more concerned about earthquakes?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we're working right now on the interstate bridge replacement program right now for the interstate bridge. I mean, that old span up there was built in 1917. It's an old bridge. The other one was 1958. And that bridge in particular across the Columbia River is particularly vulnerable to a collapse. And that would not just cancel out Interstate 5 for a period of time, but the river traffic too. So that's one of the most important aspects of that replacement is the seismic factor in there too. So we're very worried about that. We're worried about the seismic issues and the bridge issues, not just along the interstate bridge, but also really throughout Oregon. We've got an awful lot of bridges up and down the Oregon coast also that we worry about too. Yeah, the seismic issue is huge as we're concerned about all of that. That's a major issue as we look at our system and the safety of our system.
Now, we're hearing this morning that bridge that collapsed in Baltimore was in fair condition. How safe are our bridges? Do we have a rating system?
Yeah, we do. And let's remember that all of our bridges have to undergo a safety inspection every 2 years, some of them every year. And the interstate bridge just underwent its safety inspection just in the last month or two, I think it was, too. So we do a complete safety inspection on all of these bridges every 2 years. That's required under the federal government. So we have to make sure that they're safe and they're operating safely, and especially with the interstate bridge. It's got all those old moving parts. We got to make sure that they're working safely, too. So we don't know exactly what happened with this Maryland issue right now, too. But, we are pretty sure. I mean, everything is operating safely right now, too. We're not afraid right now that something is going to collapse because it's not operating safely right now. We're comfortable with the safety inspections that we do. Yeah, things are operating safely right now.
Don, we're out of time, but just imagine that you're on one of these bridges when they collapse. Do you have any? Is there a plan for that if your car goes down? I mean, what in the world do you do? That's the ultimate.
After the screaming, I suppose. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we all have to be very, very careful in all of our driving for all things. And, you know, we're familiar with this in Oregon with the kinds of winter weather that we get and that sort of thing. I think we can feel fairly comfortable that our bridges are safe. And I think that's one thing we need to keep in mind is that we're watching the safety system or our bridges very, very carefully. So I think we need to keep that in mind as we go forward from here.
Don, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Don Hamilton from ODOT.
You have been listening to Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of this week's stories. You can follow me on X, formerly Twitter, at Brett Recamp. If you missed anything, you can catch the podcast at KXL.com, and you can download the show on iTunes or Google Play. Just look for Beyond the Headlines KXL. We now have 510 shows to choose from. For Alpha Media USA in downtown Portland, I'm Brett Recamp on FM News 101.
This has been Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. This has been a special presentation of Alpha Media.